is my first language, so that was fantastic. So Noah only found out very quickly that she was doing this, so thank you so much. Well, we have been going through a series looking at Genesis 1 to 3 called It's Written on the Rocks. We had a guest speaker last week, Sylvia Purdy, and she had a great sermon which gave us a lot to think about thistles and thorns. Elliot's, I think, going to close the series next week. But for this week, I was thinking, with Elliot and Sarah not here, what on earth can I put on my plate to make life just a little bit harder? And I thought, I know, how about I preach on the ultimate meaning of life? How about we just kind of put that one on there and chew that one a little bit? So, why am I here? This is putting me firmly in a very definite demographic. The answer is 42. Does anybody know where that comes from? Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. So of course, I don't need to preach today. We all know that the supercomputer Deep Thought has already come up with the answer, and it is 42. Yes, because it was what was the question as well. You know, if I do a quick Google search, I can find a number of different disciplines to go to find the answer. And people do search for this answer. I know I could, is this, there we go. I always get this wrong. That way? Skinny end, that way. Awesome. One thing they didn't tell me about this role is I would have to get used to so much different technology. There we go. Excellent. So I could choose to go to a number of very different disciplines. I'm going to move around a lot because I do, that's okay. And I know that I could Google these because I did Google it to find out some. I could go to science, and we see it says, as far as we can tell from a purely scientific viewpoint, human life has absolutely no meaning. Humans are the outcome of blind evolutionary processes that operate without goal or purpose. Yeah. I could go to psychology. Ultimately, man should not ask what the meaning of his life is, but rather must recognize that it is he who is asked. In a word, each man is questioned by life, and he can only answer to life by answering for his own life. To life, he can only respond by being responsible. And if anybody figures what that means, please come and see me after. I could go to philosophy. When someone complains that his or her life is meaningless, he or she is often, and perhaps characteristically, complaining that the narrative of their life has become unintelligible to them, that it lacks any point, any movement. Google is my friend. Or, again, as you saw, I could go to modern. Now, Adam did this one. He thinks it's modernish fiction, but for those teachers, I do know that this is still considered modern fiction. The ultimate answer to life, the universe and everything, is 42.
Amen. Some sense.
Absolutely. But actually, none of those give me any confidence. I have a faith, and what better place to look for meaning than where it all began, in those first few chapters. And so we do begin. In the beginning, God. You know, because we read through Genesis 1, and we've spent quite a bit of time there over the last few weeks, and we saw that God created order out of chaos. He brought the heavens and the earth into being. He spoke and created light, separating it from the darkness. The waters, he separated and put in their places above and below. And in in verse 11, we have God bringing forth vegetation, plants, trees. He created the sun, the moon, the stars, put them in their places, and then he gets busy with aquatic creatures. I'm not one. I can't swim. He gets the feathered ones. He gets the birds and the things that crawl along the earth going. And at every step of the way, God takes a step back or a pause, and he looks at it and he says, it is good. Until in verse 26, we have God speaking of us for the first time. And he says, let us create man in our image, after our likeness. And at the end of that amazing creativity, God stood back and commented again. But this time he said, it is very good. But why? Why did he create us? What's the meaning of life, of my life? And ours definitely isn't the first generation to ponder these things. If we look through the Bible, we see the psalmist, we see David here writing, what is a man that you are mindful of him, and the son of man that you care for him? We have Job, as he's trying to fathom life and suffering. Why is light given to him who is in misery, and life to the bitter in soul? Viktor Frankl is a renowned psychologist, and he is especially well known for his work on meaning of life. And he was also a survivor of the World War II concentration camps. And his experiences in the camps convinced him that the biggest difference between those who survived and those who didn't survive was finding purpose. It didn't matter about what people had to eat, about what particular labours they were forced to do, whether they were working inside or outside on particular days, because everybody was exposed to horrific conditions. Nobody had enough to eat. Everybody was exposed to the elements at some point. But he found in his work that people had to come to a place where they found their own unique individual purpose in life. And he wrote that those who had found some meaning or purpose were much more likely to survive those concentration camps than those who hadn't found purpose. So if purpose is so important to us then, as humans, where do we go searching for it? Where do we find it? We find it in three places: in our relationship to God, in our relationship to the rest of creation, and our worship of God, Father, Son, and Spirit. So let's start with the first one. We should be done by about 12. So we read in Genesis 1, verse 26, then God said, let us make mankind in our image, in our likeness. So you and I have been created in the image of God. And as we journey through each day and as we continue and maintain our focus on God, we are drawn by the Spirit deeper into that likeness. Kind of in 2 Corinthians, we get the verses, and we all with unveiled faces contemplate the Lord's glory, are being transformed into his image with ever-increasing glory, which comes from the Lord, who is the Spirit. So by the Spirit, as we consider God's glory, the image of God within us, it becomes more into focus. It becomes clearer. The more we allow God to direct our lives, the more his image is reflected through our lives, in the love and the kindness and the caring that we show to others. You know, being made in our image, we can only find true meaning when we know who we are in relation to God. We are created by him. He is the very foundation stone of our being. A few months ago, while we were in lockdown, I brought a message called Signposts. And in that one, I was examining where we go to as a society to find, or as individuals, to find our true worth, or to find what we think we are worth. Whose voice is it that we tend to listen to find our worth? Because as we journey through life, there are various signposts that we listen to, and career, grades, looks, how much money I earn, my appearance, maybe it's getting on the property ladder. But there are problems with these measures. They don't stay. As we move through life, they change. My hair is now chemically enhanced. It's quite grey. As I've got 50, my jeans have got a bit stretchier. I can't run after my miscreant children quite as... I'm slower, they're faster. Things change, we change. So we can't find ultimate meaning in those things. It's like the man who builds his house upon the sand. As life's storms come, it erodes that basis. There is a more important journey that you and I are on, and that journey is into the image of Christ. Because that is where our true identity is found, in our relationship with God. Our relationship with God, your relationship, my relationship. It's that one relational constant that we have that won't change. God is unchanging. But we find meaning in life in relation to the rest of creation as well. Because when we look at Genesis 1:26, it says, "Then God said, let us make mankind in our image, in our likeness, so that he may rule over the fish in the sea and the birds in the sky, over the livestock and all the wild animals, and over all the creatures that move along the ground." God made us. We are part of creation. And it's this place of relationship that I want to explore a little bit here, because when we get this wrong, it can either inflate or deflate our worth. We have a place as a created being. We're not God. We are creative. Yes, we are. Made in his image. Yes. And we can create things in our own image. There are a number of statues and portraits and things around. But we can't do it by speaking into a void. If anything, we recreate. We reassemble what God has already created. And when I can forget my place in that order of creation, I can get a little bit of an inflated sense of who I am. I can become the main subject of my thoughts. I can become the main subject of all my decision making. And that flows through to how I treat people and how I expect to be treated. As though I am the center of the universe. Now, I have got wonderful family who continually tell me that I'm not the center of the universe, which is very good. But I know that I am just one small part of an extraordinary creation that encompasses untold galaxies that we have not even been able to discover yet. It incorporates billions of people and amazing histories of different people groups that extend back to the very beginning of time. In the beginning, God created. When I forget that, I can lead a very selfish, egocentric life and expect cups of tea brought to me in bed before I get up. Adam? But that is not that humble, selfish, selfless image of the servant king that we have been shown through Christ. In Matthew 20, the first will be last and the last will be first. But there's another relationship order in that verse as well. Let us make mankind in our image so that. And God immediately placed us in relationship with the rest of creation, with the rest of the created order. We were created so that we might rule over the fish in the sea, the birds in the sky, the livestock, wild animals, you're fine, and creatures that move along the ground. But rule here isn't in the sense of ownership. You know, it's more in the sense of stewardship. And for those who like The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, I hope you also like Lord of the Rings. Because for the Lord of the Rings fans, Tolkien explored that relationship with the stewards of Gondor. They were meant to be ruling this kingdom in trust, awaiting the return of the actual king. Just as we are. But as they forgot their position, their order, what that designated purpose was for, they started to put the needs of the kingdom behind their needs. And they started to negate their responsibility to protect and to keep the kingdom safe. We run into trouble when we neglect our created order and purpose. In our case, God created man, and then he gave him a task. We find meaning in life through our worship of God, Father, Son, and Spirit, our amazingly mysterious triune God. And when we talk about worship, most people I will talk to automatically think about this wonderful sung worship that was led by Lucy and her team this morning. And it is. That is worship. But it's so much more than that as well. And as a congregation, we've been exercising some kind of quite dormant muscles, doing some alternate worship every fourth week. Because to worship something is to attribute worth to it, to see its worth and to give reverence and high admiration. When we are worshiping God, we are seeing his worth and we are actively showing him glory and honor. And in that sense, worship extends into every part of our lives. It is not something that we simply come to church to do and to participate in. It goes with us. The way we work, how we conduct ourselves in our relationships, how we handle money, how we practice generosity, everything that we do can be an act of worship or not. Now, who here has ever amused themselves with having a little bit too much time on their hands and Googling couples that look alike or dog owners that look like their dogs? I'll say that my children do and then come and show me. Okay. It really is a thing, and science has got involved. So there was a study published in 2006 which asked people to judge the looks, personalities, and ages of 160 married couples. And the participants viewed the photographs of the men and the women. They were done separately, and they weren't told who was married to who. But the subjects consistently judged the ones who were married as being similar in appearance and in personality. And the researchers also found that the longer the couples had been together, the more similar they appeared in both appearance and personality. So you're going to start to look like me. But the study also offered some answers on why couples might look alike. And the main factor was the shared life experiences. Shared life experiences can end up being reflected physically on people. And you think about it, when there is happiness and laughter in a relationship, those muscles and wrinkles that denote that show up on our faces. Years of shared experiences in marriages, happy or otherwise, are reflected on their faces. Think about what that means for us as the bride of Christ. As we have years of shared experience with Christ. In an aside, the researchers also found that dog owners that look like their dogs, that didn't increase with the years. The dogs were generally brought already looking similar. So I'm not going to, anyone who knows my dog, I'm not going to get any fluffier than this. But actually, I've got a very fluffy dog. You know, when we look at what happens in Genesis 3, which is Eve eating from the tree, we can easily see what happens when we shift our focus from worshipping God, from holding him in high reverence and high esteem, when we take our focus off him. In chapter 6 of verse 3, it says, in verse 6 of chapter 3, thank you, when the woman saw that the fruit of the tree was good for food and pleasing to the eye and also desirable for gaining wisdom, she took some and ate it. And she also gave some to her husband who was with her and he ate it. Everything we do reflects our focus and our experiences. Reverence of God and remembering that created order were not her focus. If God had remained central to her in that conversation, do you think it would have happened? When we remember our created order and we continue to give God as being our focus, the reverence and the glory that is a accorded him, we're much less likely to run into problems. So I'm going to leave it there. I cannot give you your own unique and individual answer to what is the meaning of your life. Why are you here? What is the purpose? But I can say that looking and reading through Genesis, we can find some good places to go searching for that meaning. And when you do go searching, I'd suggest that the three places that are most important to look at is your relation to God. God created us in his image, gave us life. In our relationship to the rest of creation, God created us and gave us a purpose, a chance to experience his creation, putting us as stewards over it. And in our worship of God, Father, Son, and Spirit, because in focusing on that loving relationship with our Creator, in worship, we find meaning and joy. I'm going to ask Lucy and the team, if you can come up and lead us in Turn Our Eyes Upon Jesus again, because I think that really fits here.